Hello, everybody, and welcome to our first episode of Cinephile, where Adam Newman and myself, Philip Mercadante, your host, will be discussing movies that we've seen and movies that we like in the past. And we're this episode, we're going to be talking about the 2013 Oscars, our predictions, what we like, what we don't like, and where we think it should have gone. So with no further ado, Mr. Newman.
Okay, this is the first year that I've actually watched all of the Oscar movies before going to see the Oscars, and I take a lot of pride in that.
And how did you do that, Adam? How did we see all those movies?
Okay, well, I actually had seen seven of the nine before, but then Mr. Mercadante and I, we went to a marathon to watch five of them this past Friday. Yeah.
And we, all in a row,
only us two in the theater, except for the very beginning where three people showed up, paid the $30, and then never showed up again.
So the way it worked is the nominees were played over 2 days, all the best movie nominees, and I obviously hadn't seen any of them because hashtag shame, hashtagging outside of Twitter. And basically, you pay $30 and you get to see all five movies, and you just come back and forth after each movie. It's in the same theater. You can keep your seat and all that jazz. Well, what ends up happening is there's this group of old people that sit down in front of us, and they watch Beast of the Southern Wild.
Yep.
And then they just disappear.
For the rest of the day.
And I asked the manager, and he was like, yeah, I can't sell individual tickets, so they pretty much just paid $30 a piece for one movie.
I hope they enjoyed it more than we did.
They gotcha!
All right, so let's talk about, why don't we go supportings first?
Supporting actors?
Yeah, okay. All right. We're going to do the major Oscar categories, our predictions, and who we think should have won. So
we've got supporting actors. We have Mr. De Niro, Mr. Hoffman, Mr. Jones, Mr. Waltz, and Mr. Arkin.
Alan Arkin was in, movie's Argo. Not coming to me, Argo, that's what it was. De Niro was in Silver Linings Playbook. Hoffman was in The Master. Tommy Lee Jones was in Lincoln. And Christoph Waltz was
I believe it's pronounced Lincoln.
Lincoln? Yes, that is it. That's it. And Christoph Waltz was in Django Unchained. I've been watching a lot of reviews and predictions and all that stuff. It seems like this is one of the few from this year, which this year supposedly is kind of confusing. In the past, a lot of the times, the predictions are pretty easy. I actually faced Ebert in the Outguess Ebert contest many years ago, and I beat him. I got every category right except for I wasn't able to get the tiebreak, which was how many Oscars with the movie with the most win. But
if you accurately predicted everything, wouldn't that?
I did beat him, but everybody else did too. Like several people, and then they ended up winning. Somebody ended up winning tickets to the premiere of Up, which would have been awesome to go to. But this year is actually one of the toughest to guess because everything is so scattered. And with the SAG Awards, the Directors Guild Awards, with all these different award shows, everybody's been going in different directions. So it's kind of confusing. A lot of times there's kind of a consensus person, and maybe the actor role will be split between the two. But this year is kind of crazy all over the place, except for in supporting actor, which I think it's going to be a runaway for Tommy Lee Jones in Lincoln.
Why so?
It just seems like everybody is going in his side, and this is the only actor out of all the categories that is going, everybody's going, yes, Tommy Lee Jones. I think,
is it because he shaved his head for the role? Because I feel like you shave your hair, you get a lot of attention.
And what I find it strange because I thought, because Tommy Lee Jones was nominated for an All Country Out for Old Men, I believe he won, and a lot of times, That's 2006, I believe, or 2007.
2007.
And a lot of times they don't like, the Academy isn't big on double awarding yet. They will do it eventually, but they kind of want people to have time.
You mean in between like 10 years? Yes, spans?
Exactly. Well, I mean, Meryl Streep's been nominated 18 times or something. She's only won three. You know, I mean, that's still pretty incredible.
That's impressive.
But when it comes to this, I think Tommy Lee Jones is going to run away with it. I think Christoph Waltz is a really popular one. I know that you really want him to see it.
I just like that he wasn't a horrible Nazi in this movie.
Well, in Inglourious Basterds, he won it.
For that role.
Yeah, for that role. And I think he was better in Inglourious Basterds. Having said that, I did like Django better.
I feel like he was the exact same character. Like, he's almost like a method or a character actor, because he seemed like the exact same guy. Instead of being a Nazi supremacist, though, his humor and everything was exactly the same for a white progressive.
And he was just a little bit, and for some reason, even though he was exactly the same, he was a good guy in this one, he was a bad guy in the other one. I think it was a good performance. I think Alan Arkin should win for Argo. I think Alan Arkin is great. Argo, which is a good movie. I think Alan Arkin and John Goodman's part in the movie, those two characters.
I think Goodman had my favorite. He was my favorite character in the whole movie.
And I wish he would get a nomination for something like this, but he doesn't, so I'll take Arkin in this case. Their parts in Argo are great.
Right.
And then Philip Seymour Hoffman deserves at least talk, because The Master, which is incredibly snubbed this year, it's disturbing how many awards it should be at least nominated for and wasn't, especially cinematography, which we won't get into, which is just a crime. But Philip Seymour Hoffman is great in everything. He won an Oscar for Capote for Best Actor years and years ago. So he'll win plenty more, I assume, or he'll be nominated for plenty more. And then De Niro is actually supposedly the surprise potential. If there's going to be a surprise, it's going to be De Niro in Silver Linings Playbook, which I couldn't disagree with more, because I didn't care for the movie that much, and I didn't think it was a great performance by De Niro. And De Niro's great and all that stuff, but...
How many Oscars has he won?
I don't know how many he's won. We should probably look that up at some point.
Probably looked that up before we started the podcast.
Yeah, but he's great. He's a great actor, one of the great all-time actors and stuff like that. And a lot of his performances as of late, Meet the Fockers... though I know you have a special place in your heart.
I like Meet the Parents and Meet the Fockers.
Meet the Parents is good.
It's a funny premise.
But he's kind of obvious that he has mailed it.
My real name is actually not Philip, it's Gaylord.
Oh, okay. So that's why. Well, he's just kind of mailed in some of his parts as of late.
Yeah, once you get to that role, like he did the same thing whenever he was in, I can't remember the name of the movie, but it's with him and the guy that played the devil. And
Al Pacino? Righteous Kill.
Yeah. Right. Oh, my God. It was so horrible. One through the eyes.
Yeah.
Two through the eyes. And I stopped watching it for the first 5 minutes because it was so fucking retarded.
Yeah, that's kind of some of the stuff that he's done as of late. There's other – that movie Red Light just came out, which just got Cillian Murphy in it. And I know some reviewers said this was one of the worst movies of the year, though it wasn't nominated for Razzies or anything like that. Let's want to move on to supporting.
We're going to supporting actress, which is Miss Rachel Adams, Amy Adams, Sally Field, Anne Hathaway, Helen Hunt, and somebody with the last name Weaver.
Jackie Weaver, I believe. Jackie Weaver is the mother in Silver Linings Playbook. Helen Hunt was in The Sessions, which I didn't see, so I can't accurately decide whether or not she is. Anne Hathaway was in Les Mis. Sally Field. Lincoln, and Amy Adams was in The Master. The award is going to go to Anne Hathaway. I think Helen Hunt has an outside shot for The Sessions, which the movie's not getting a ton of buzz, and John Hawkes didn't get a nomination, which he should get a nomination for everything for the rest of his life. But I think it's between those two. I want Amy Adams to win desperately for The Master. I know I'm kind of talking up The Master big time. It is my favorite director currently. It's his movie.
Currently of all time, today, now, forever, presently.
I think she deserves it. She's going to win. She will win one at one point because she is young and she's good. I think Sally Field's performance is one of the most annoying this year as...
I disagree. She's a great single mother, and the way she handles Robin Williams' antics were perfect. She's got nominated for Miss Doubtfire, right?
It was Miss Doubtfire, right. 15 years late. Yeah, but
they do a lot of things retroactive sometimes in the Academy. That's a complete lie. They're not known for going back in time.
And Jackie Weaver in Silver Linings Playbook was actually one of my favorite parts of the movie, but it wasn't much of a movie, so I couldn't bring myself to fall in love with the role, let alone the other characters or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So now we're going to move on to Best Actress.
Best Actress?
Yes.
Okay. The nominees are, let me see, Jennifer Lawrence, Jessica Chastain. I don't want to butcher the little girl's name.
The little girl from Southern Wild?
last name is Wallace. Naomi Watts and Emmanuel Riva. It's a two-way battle, once again, between, it sounds like, Jennifer Lawrence and Emmanuel Riva. If I was forced into...
You have to pick one.
I have to pick one. I think Emmanuel Riva will win it because the Academy is about movies, which means they're about drama, which means they're about the story. And the story would be Emmanuel Riva, who's in her 70s, I believe, and she plays...
So she's going to beat out Wallace, who's the youngest person ever nominated.
She will definitely beat out Wallace.
With her age.
But Wallace is my choice. I didn't love Beasts of the Southern Wild, but her performance in Beasts of the Southern Wild for a five-year-old.
Yeah, she was a very convincing child.
And some of the things I have her do, I mean, a lot of it is voiceover, but some of the things that they made her do for a five-year-old.
Like catch a catfish with her hands?
Exactly, and then punch it. It's
I gotcha, sucker!
It's a really, really good performance.
He's like crying cue when her father dies.
Yes,
like
that, it was really.
They can't cry. Anymore.
Exactly, and so I thought it was. I thought she did a really good job. I don't want Jennifer Lawrence to win, not because she's not a good actress. I just don't want Silver Linings Playbook to win a bunch of awards. Jessica Chastain was kind of the favorite, but Zero Dark Thirty has lost a lot of momentum going into award season. Yeah. And I don't think she'll end up coming out with it, though a lot of people have said that they want to. I think that it's a little, her performance is good and stuff like that, but I don't think it's very personal, and I don't think the movie's very personal. I think it's very procedural, and it kind of puts you off at a distance, and that's why I'm not gonna give a Best Actress performance for somebody who doesn't draw me into their life. So I think, and Naomi Watts, I haven't seen The Impossible, which is about the tsunami over.
Oh, that's right. They're surviving the 2005 tsunami.
I haven't seen it, but Naomi Watts is a great actress, so I'm sure she gives a great performance in that.
I heard it was a great movie. I wish I could have seen it, but our theater wouldn't.
It wasn't nominated for any other awards except that one.
I'm saying, like, we would have had a chance to see it if we didn't live in the middle of Florida.
Well, I mean, I have gone out of the. I've gone to Gainesville to see. Went to see The Master there because they weren't playing it around here. You have to really go searching. And yeah, it was one of those movies I was kind of interested in, but when it all came down to it, I just kept seeing other movies that were local because I wanted to see local movies. And I think this year. It's not a deep year. I know it is a deep year for movies. It's not top heavy, though. I don't think any of these movies is like all-time great. Mm-hmm. But I think most of the movies that were nominated and most of the movies I saw in theater this year were good movies.
Well, see, the way that works is like movies that... So 2000, even numbered years always have really, really deep, great movies.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Like we saw this year. There's a lot of really good movies, but they're not so... amazing that it takes, you know, a slave force to pull down the highway.
Yeah.
But odd numbered years, and watch me on this, this year, 2013,
yep,
will have the best movie of the last decade, I think. Because it's been building,
uh-huh,
and it's time for another good movie to come up, I think. And I think that...
No, that makes sense.
So the heaviest movies are going to be fewer, but they're going to be amazing. They're going to blow all these movies out of the water.
Well, I'm hoping that happens, not because... I didn't like these movies, or but I want something. I want that one movie to kind of draw me in. I haven't cried in. I've cried at one movie in my entire life, which was in fourth grade when I saw Jack in the theater.
Aww.
Yeah, I know, terrible
that
movie.
That was. But a rough
when
movie
I was
a kid,
kid. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
For a kid to watch that movie.
And ever since then, I haven't cried. And there's
because it introduces you to death really early.
Exactly, home. And the idea of aging and but keeping it relevant for kids. I know every critic in the world hated the movie, and I don't remember anything about it except for that I was sobbing in the theater.
He loved red gummy bears.
He did rub,
yeah, and he also had a crush on his teacher, and he gave her all his red gummy bears.
Okay, I believe that. Well, I remember when his best friend was doing a speech, and Robin Williams fell down a set of stairs when the speech was going on, kind of cutting back and forth, and I remember just bawling my eyes out. And that was the saddest moment in a movie I've ever had. There's been one other movie that's got me close. Toy Story 3.
Oh, God.
I was in the theater with two females, my sister and a friend. I'm watching the movie. Everybody knows.
Spoiler
what
alert.
Yeah.
Listen, if you haven't seen
Toy Story 3,
get
leave
the hell
podcast
out of my
now.
Podcast.
Yeah, and
don't
go watch
come
it.
Back until
go,
you've seen
and
it.
Go watch it because
I don't love you anymore. Just get
the Toy Story trilogy. It should be talked about with the Lord of the Rings and Star Wars.
It's definitely the most emotionally tying movie or movie trilogy of any of
especially
movies.
People our age, I'm talking about the 20s to...
If right now, if you're today 23 to, let's say, 32, 35,
then
in that age range.
They're your toys. We grew up with these toys. And Toy Story 3, the scene pretty close to the end, where they all hold hands. I don't want to give everything away.
No, they've been thrown out by happenstance of the universe, and they're about to be tossed in the garbage heap with an incinerator.
They all accept death together. Yeah, like, me too.
What is sitting there? He's this cartoon is scrambling to save his friends, which we've all come to love over the past 15 years.
Yep.
So, you know,
and then all of a sudden, and then he turns to his friend, and his friend accepts it, and they all do.
Buzz just puts his hand out for Woody, and they grab him, and they close their eyes, and he leans back. Yeah.
It's, and that moment, I remember sitting there going,
if those toys get burned, I'm
going
to cry.
And you know it's not going to happen, but at the same time, I'm sitting there, I'm like, this is it, I'm gonna break out sobbing. And I go, I look over to my sister and to my friend, and they are both gone. Like, they're just tears are running. I'm like, okay, I'm not the only one. And I didn't do it. I was able to hold myself back. But I haven't had quite an experience like that in the theater. And there's some of these movies that I was really hoping that I'd get really an emotional kick. And there wasn't a lot of them.
There was. I didn't really see a movie that made me upset. Like, yeah. I got really like, yeah, fuck yeah, get them out of Iran. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really wanted him to catch that pigeon in a movie.
Yeah.
And Life of Pi was interesting, and you know, Lincoln was a surprise ending.
We'll talk about those. Anyway, let's go to actor.
So now we're gonna go to best actor, and we've got Daniel Day-Lewis, Denzel Washington, Hugh Jackman, Joaquin Phoenix, and Alice Cooper.
When it comes to this, that's Bradley Cooper.
I have it in front of me. It's Alice.
This one is going to be Daniel Day-Lewis. And Daniel Day-Lewis is the greatest actor, not only of our generation, but of all time.
Really?
I think he's better than Brando. I think he's gone so far above. This is going to be his third Oscar for Best Actor, which is impressive because he does like one movie every 5 years.
Right. But he waits in laurels for the best movie.
From what I understand, I don't want to be quoted on this, but I have read that Spielberg had offered this role to Daniel Day-Lewis for 5 years, over and over and over, saying, will you do this? And Daniel Day-Lewis every time says, no. No, no, no. He always declines roles until he feels like he's absolutely ready to do this. And he absolutely immerses himself in these roles.
He becomes the character.
What one of the people said that was on the movie said, I didn't meet Daniel Day-Lewis till the last day of filming.
Right, I was telling you about, what's his name from 50-50 and Premium Rush?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt,
who's a good actor in his own, right, said, you know, on Conan, he was like, I did not meet Daniel Day-Lewis until we had our rap party, and you know, Conan's like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, he was Lincoln. He was Lincoln for months, the entire shoot.
There are, like, for the movie The Boxer, which he didn't win an award for, but he spent 6 months boxing. And then for The Butcher, he did shifts with butchers, and then to get into character would start fights on the street.
Great.
Yeah, it's incredible what he's willing to go for.
And for oil, he actually abducted a bitch.
And There Will Be Blood. There Will Be Blood. He did win the award for Best Actor there. He ended up doing this movie Nine in between then, which is kind of a musical. No. That was Nine. I think this was like Nine and a Half or something. It was a remake of a musical, and it was it didn't do very well, but. Since then, he's now made Lincoln. It's an incredible performance. He is Lincoln the entire time.
Yeah, I couldn't see through it.
I didn't see Denzel Washington in Flight.
I wanted to see Flight, but it's really popular among a lot of people.
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
Because if you go to try to Redbox it, it's gone.
Yeah, it's...
No Redbox
in the area. Because it was, first of all, it was a very well-done trailer. I have no idea what the movie's about, just watching that trailer. And it kind of...
He flies a plane upside down drunk and saves everybody.
But you don't... and it, sometimes it seems like, oh, it's going to be this kind of mystery as to what happens. It's going to be
I think it's going to be about his personal life.
A lot of people,
there's like 5 minutes of plane scene, and then the whole thing is
I've heard it is a lot of personal
about
life.
About his personal life and how his wife hates him.
And stuff like that.
He ends up living alone.
I know, with cocaine and hookers and beer and all that stuff.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
And he... I'm not a big Denzel guy, though. I've always thought he's kind of very similar in a lot of his roles. Not to say that he's not great in this. I will see Flight, and I will review it on Cinephile when we get that chance to.
Yeah.
Hugh Jackman's nominated for Les Mis. That's a crime. We'll talk about Les Mis in a minute. But I do like Hugh Jackman.
Although the best part of Les Mis is when Wolverine shows up and knifes the Gladiator.
Oh, okay.
Like the adamantium pops out of his hands.
Oh, that's true. Yes, yeah. That happens. Yes. The best part is that Hugh Jackman is Wolverine in Les Mis.
The entire time. With the cheesy sideburns.
Bradley Cooper in the Silver Linings Playbook. I hate Bradley Cooper. I don't hate him. I don't like him as an actor. This is his best performance. But the movie takes, I feel like it takes mental illness a little bit too lightly. And it actually bothers me a little bit. Joaquin Phoenix. Okay, we just went on a rant about how Daniel Day-Lewis is great and amazing and gets in the role. Joaquin Phoenix deserves the Oscar for Best Actor, and I'm sad that he's not going to win it. It's a tough year because any year you have to face Daniel Day-Lewis,
you're going to lose.
Yeah. It sucks because you are going to lose. And especially
unless Daniel Day-Lewis is playing the role of Simple Jack.
It's Tropic Thunder reference.
Can't go for it.
Joaquin Phoenix deserves it this year. Joaquin Phoenix is one of the best actors around. He also pisses everybody off because of the way he talks, the way he acts, and how he said that this is just some hood ornament, I believe is what he called the Oscar. So he doesn't necessarily care about stuff like that. It's an incredible performance in The Master. It is disturbing. It's incredibly complex. And it's completely different from anything he's ever done. He's in Signs. He's incredible in Signs.
Gladiator. He was in Gladiator.
His worst performance.
That was the first role I ever saw him. And I was just like, yeah,
If you want to talk about overrated movies after this, we can. And we can get into Gladiator for days.
I like Gladiator.
Joaquin Phoenix absolutely kicks ass in The Master. It's a weird movie, and I don't think that
it's not on the list.
It didn't get a lot of Oscar love because I think Paul Thomas Anderson movies a lot of the time kind of turn people away because he's brutally honest in some ways and sometimes brutally sexual in some ways. Sometimes it's a little bit too much. Some of the scenes play on for too long, but he has made some of the best movies that have ever been made. My favorite movie of all time is Magnolia, which was made by him in 1999. And anybody that hasn't seen it has to go see it. It's 3.5 hours of incredibleness. Boogie Nights is another masterpiece. There Will Be Blood.
There Will Be Blood is probably
and Punch Drunk Love is the greatest. I've seen. Punch Drunk Love is one of the greatest romantic comedies of all time. In that, it's a complete
Crazy Stupid Love is probably up there in the running.
Don't get me started.
Come on.
But Daniel Day-Lewis will win the Oscar. Joaquin Phoenix could have had a shot, but he pissed all over it when he started saying the things he started saying.
Can he like go before the church and ask for their forgiveness?
He definitely can't, considering The Master has loose ties to Scientology. So
can you say I lost the joke.
Let's talk about why don't we go to Best Director, because this is what I want to talk about, which is very strange. They started adding in this new rule, and I believe 2 or 3 years ago, where they're allowed to now do 10 Best Pictures. Nominees up to 10. This year it's 9. But they only do 5 best directors. And most of the time with the Academy, the best director will win best picture. So when you do this,
if the 9 movies don't have the same 9 directors, then they're not gonna win.
Then they're probably not gonna win. Probably not. In most cases. Bless you. The biggest story in for directors is that Ben Affleck wasn't nominated for directing Argo. And Ben Affleck has been cleaning up everywhere else he's been going. And the fact that he wasn't even nominated for the Oscar is kind of insane.
It's kind of an insult.
It's definitely an insult. I think that he absolutely deserved a nomination for Argo. First of all, how he brought the 70s together. Also, what he did.
He made it believable, too.
What he also did was, I guess what he did was he cut the frames up and then he blew them up to look grainier to make it look more 70s.
Well, the 70s film, yeah.
And I don't think it's a masterpiece of a film. And I don't even think it's his best movie that he's directed. I like Gone Baby Gone a little bit more. But
you also like Geely, so
I don't like Geely, and
don't you lie to me.
He's already got an Oscar though for best screenplay many years ago for Good Will Hunting, the great Good Will Hunting. But the nominees this year are Michael Haneke, I believe is how you pronounce it, for Amor. Ben Zeitlin, which is his first movie for Beasts of the Southern Wild.
This is his very first movie.
First movie.
He ever made.
He might have made some shorts. I haven't checked on IMDb or anything like that. But this is his first major picture. He's nominated for Best Director. I mean, very well done. That's incredible. Ang Lee for Life of Pi, Steven Spielberg for Lincoln, and David O. Russell for Silver Linings Playbook. Some people have made the claim that David O. Russell has a shot here. I don't believe it. Zeitlin, he's just happy to be invited. And
so thank you for the trip.
And Hanukkah is...
They didn't have any gefilte fish on the flight over, though. I was kind of upset about that.
Hanukkah is kind of also happy to be nominated. He's done a lot of foreign films. He is a foreign director. And he is well-known, especially in independent film communities. So it's good to see that he's got himself a nomination. But it's down between Ang Lee for Life of Pi and Steven Spielberg for Lincoln.
I feel like it's the exact same situation as whenever you're going against Daniel Day-Lewis for Best Actor, or when you're going up against Spielberg.
Well, Spielberg's got two now. His last one was Saving Private Ryan, and he had Schindler's List. I think Spielberg's going to win it. Okay, we're going to talk about Best Movie in a minute. I think Ang Lee should. Because I think that Spielberg... I'm already going to say I think Lincoln was the best movie that was nominated this year. But I think Ang Lee, what he did with the visuals, because we both saw Life of Pi in the theater.
Right.
It's incredible. The visuals
are... The CGI
are,
was almost convincing.
It's disturbing how beautiful it looks.
There are times you forget that the tiger's not real.
Exactly. And it was based off of a real tiger. And whoever the CGI guys are, they're incredible. Their animation is incredible. That one scene where the whale jumps up out of the water,
right,
and the whole water is lit from
everything,
the algae,
yeah,
and it's incredible. Plus the fact that he used not a, a no-name actor at the moment, who had never been in movies before, to be the lead and to get a performance out of him, which I didn't think he had a great performance, but to get one out of him like that, especially it's him and a CGI tiger on the water for more than half the movie. I think that's incredibly impressive. And
Meerkat Island.
And Meerkat Island, of course. But also, if Ang Lee's going to win, it's going to be because he did get screwed over many years ago when Brokeback Mountain should have won Best Picture and he should have won Best Director. And instead, I believe it lost to Crash, which is
right, yeah,
overrated. And so that's his only chance, but it's going to go to Spielberg. Like you said with Daniel Day-Lewis, it's tough against Spielberg. The only reason I don't want to give it to him, it's because he's directing Daniel Day-Lewis. And it's like, you don't have to direct him, you just let him sit there.
Yeah. Yeah, all right, Dan, Mr. Lincoln, continue.
Yeah, that is the ultimate cinephile right there, is to just watch Daniel Day-Lewis do his thing, act in any role. And that's what Spielberg did. He definitely captures the era perfect. I hate period pieces, as I've mentioned before. I don't like that because I just feel like
unless it's a French period piece.
Well, of course.
You do like Napoleon period pieces.
I do. That is true. If anything takes place around Napoleon,
he liked the first 15 minutes of Les Mis.
I didn't. I just liked
it. It was only 15 minutes long and it was near Napoleon.
The only 15 minutes long is definitely true. So Lincoln wins it. Spielberg wins it for Lincoln. But I think Ang Lee deserves it. But I wouldn't hate if Spielberg won. Absolutely. In my older age, I've come to appreciate Spielberg so much more than angsty 18-year-old Adam did when he was like, all he does is big-budget films. And you know what? This is a big-budget film that's great. It's very, very good.
Because it's easy for big-budget films, like for example, The Avengers. Great movie. But,
yeah,
but it's a big-budget film, and it's just meant to be action.
Exactly.
And all the money they poured into it was only meant to be action, whereas in Lincoln, there was so few action scenes.
Oh, and that's what's really incredible about it. And if Spielberg wins, I don't mind. The Civil War is going on. The first 5 minutes are the only thing you see of war.
Well, he also does go through the battlefield.
Yeah, he goes through the battlefield, but you don't see, there's no actual fighting.
Right, there's no fighting, but I mean,
he walks through it.
He sees all the bodies.
The whole movie is, I'm not the most politically involved. I do have opinions, but it makes politics interesting.
Right.
And they do it such a way that the character actors that you see, you might not necessarily know their names, but you go, oh, it's that guy.
He's
and you will remember
Justified.
Him. Yeah, exactly. Walton Goggins makes an appearance, awesome in it, as kind of this squirrely little...
Oh, hell, shoot
character.
Me on my way out.
Yeah.
I'm voting yes.
shoot me too.
All right, let's go. And now let's get on to
the best movie. All right, so the nominees are Amour, Argo, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Django Unchained, The Life of Pi, Lincoln, Zero Dark Thirty, Silver Linings Playbook, and another movie is Les Mis, Les Miserables.
Okay, well, we'll talk about a little bit about all of these. I know that you weren't able to see all of them, but you did see
The only one I did not see, the only two I did not see, Zero Dark Thirty, nor did I see Silver Linings Playbook.
That's right. Okay, let's just, I'll come out and say, Lincoln is going to win, and that's the end of it. There's, I don't think that, I don't think any other movie has a chance right now. Argo looked like it had a shot, but because of Ben Affleck snubbing, I feel like he doesn't really have, that it doesn't have much of a shot anymore. I also think that Lincoln should win, and I think it's...
So that's one of your few, like... Yes. I liked it, and I want, and it's going to win, and I want it to
win. I do not think it was the best movie I saw in the theater this year. It's probably number five in my top five, which we'll get into afterwards. But it was really good. It makes politics interesting. I've seen it twice now. It was better on the second viewing. And if a movie is better the second time you see it, it's definitely a movie worth watching. I think that you haven't really seen a movie till you've seen it twice. Because the first time, it's surprise. You're just kind of reacting. The second time, you know what's coming.
You're looking for stuff.
And you're digesting.
You know what you're supposed to try to intake.
Exactly. And I think with this one, I was floored with how well the time passed. It's a 2.5 hour movie that
but
feels
it doesn't
like,
feel like that.
It doesn't feel like it.
Especially if you have to leave halfway through to go pick up your girlfriend.
That's exactly true. My only issue is I know it's got to end with... Shocker, spoiler.
Hey guys, listen, if you don't know anything about Abraham Lincoln, go ahead and take a break and come back, because I don't want to, it's a little soon for some people, and I don't want this podcast to make anyone cry, so just avoid the spoiler.
Lincoln dies, and so that's the end of the movie. I feel like it was rushed. I feel like also... Lincoln's assassination, and I feel like when the vote goes through, everybody knows that the 13th Amendment went through. So that's no spoiler, but it's still tension filled and awesome when it happens. After that, there's about 30 minutes at the end of the movie where a bunch of stuff happens and it's not as good as the rest of the stuff,
right.
And then they kill Lincoln. I feel like it wasn't necessarily...
Which Bill O'Reilly must have loved, because it was great publicity for his book.
That's true. I feel like the killing of Lincoln, of course he had to die, but I didn't feel like the movie was all about Lincoln's life. It was about Lincoln's life during this point.
Right, it was just about the 13th Amendment. The movie isn't about Lincoln, it's about the 13th Amendment when you look at it.
Exactly. And so what I feel like is we didn't need to see Lincoln die. We know he does. That right there was the victory of the movie. 2.5 hours invested into it, and by the end of it, I'm going, please, that, even though I know
I
it gets
I don't,
it.
You don't want to see it. And it catches you that it's not in Ford's Theater and that they're not watching Our American Cousin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and because I did make that comment, even seeing it the second time. But I feel like that part's a little bit rushed. The last half hour where they're negotiating a treaty is a little bit too much. But the first 2 hours of the movie are so well done, so well acted, and they draw you in. Even when there's lots of names, lots of political things going around, it's so well tied together.
The characters are really easy to pick up. Normally, like if you're watching a TV show, it takes you 4 or 5 episodes
to get
you learn
into
your
it,
characters.
Yeah.
Like if you watch Downton Abbey,
yeah,
there's so many characters.
I feel like
I'm in season two. I don't know half their names.
I feel like the same thing about like HBO shows. They kind of just drop you and they're like, "Good luck," you know.
There you go.
We'll
have fun.
Later. Yeah. And
hope you have the internet to look it up.
They do the same thing in Lincoln, but
they're
able to establish
them. Yeah, you can follow the characters and you can like or dislike the characters almost immediately.
Exactly, and I think
like Stargate Man.
But I don't think there's James Spader. Yes, he's in it. Which James Spader, John Hawks. And I'm never going to remember his name. He was the guy that directed Leaves of Grass. He's in a bunch of Coen Brothers movies. I'm sorry that I can't remember it right now. Those are three guys there, the lobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
And they...
Wait, is it the guy from... Is it the lobbyist?
He's a three-named guy.
Is he the one from... why am I not remembering anything today?
I don't know.
The HBO's Deadwood. Is it him?
I don't know. No, that's John Hawks.
That's John Hawks.
John Hawks is great. He was the guy that should have been nominated for The Sessions, supposedly. I haven't seen The Sessions, but wasn't. He plays a guy with an iron lung in the movie. And
In The Sessions,
yeah.
They didn't have iron lungs back then.
Yeah, that's true. but every little character performance is really good in Lincoln. So I think Lincoln is the best movie out of the movies that are listed. I think number two, which is kind of, I think number two is probably Argo. I liked Argo quite a bit. You saw it too? Liked it?
I liked it. I thought it was a great story. It was pretty historically accurate.
And one of the great things is that through that movie, I felt tension, even though I knew what was going to happen.
Even though you knew none of them were going to die.
The customs.
Spoiler alert.
The customs part, when they're going through and they're going to customs. My heart was beating pretty fast, and even though I know exactly what's going to happen, I'm going, get the fuck out, please, get
just
the fuck
go.
Out, just get out. Life of Pi, I saw the first time, I wasn't wowed by, saw it the second time, liked it so much more.
It would have been better in 3D.
I hate 3D, so it never, ever will be good in 3D. Life of Pi, the beginning section is very good, when they're in the water, it's very good. there's the ending, which I don't want to spoil with any of them, that involves a confession with.
Right. They bring two different realities together, basically.
And I know what happens in the book. It did not translate well to film.
Right.
It was awful. And also, I feel like Life of Pi is a movie that, because the character in it is so spiritually active in so many different religions, I feel like it's a movie that should have let us decide what it's about. Instead of just hammering home, this is what it's about. And I feel like that's the only real shortcoming of the movie.
Well, I also thought the biggest shortcoming was Meerkat Island.
Meerkat Island was a little bit weird.
I wanted to see more of Meerkat Island.
It was weird, but it almost fit, especially how beautiful the movie looked with all the meerkats.
Yeah, yeah.
The island was incredible.
And my favorite scene is when he's like, oh, meerkats are so beautiful, and they're all climbing up on him, and he's having fun.
Yeah.
And then you see Richard Parker run up and just grabs one and rips its head off.
And he's like, Richard Parker.
I believe in life and everyone should live happy and all creatures are the same energy, just in different forms. And, he's eating one. Richard Parker.
Django Unchained, that's Tarantino. I really think that it should win Best Original Screenplay. Tarantino deserves it at some point. He should have won it for Pulp Fiction. That should have won in 94 for Best Picture. But Django Unchained, I didn't love. I felt the same way about Tarantino's.
It was just a slaughter piece. It was just another slaughter piece.
I feel like the same thing with like Inglourious Basterds, where it's Tarantino being Tarantino, you know, a little bit too much. I love Kill Bill, though. I did love that. I love Pulp Fiction. It's my second favorite movie of all time. And I'm still a big fan of Jackie Brown as well, which is very underrated. I'm not a big Reservoir Dogs guy, but I just feel like Django didn't deserve to be nominated for Best Picture if the other ones weren't nominated for Best Picture. Silver Linings Playbook, I'm not a big fan of the movie. It wasn't the worst movie that was nominated, but I feel like it takes mental illness a little bit too lightly, and the fact that it was a very ordinary romantic comedy got nominated, that kind of bothers me. Also, it's one of the first movies in a long time to be nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, and all acting performances, which is very strange to me because I don't know why.
Are you worried that they're going to sweep up at the Oscars?
No, we won't do anything at the Oscars, I promise. But it wasn't great. Except the best part in the movie didn't get nominated, which was Chris Tucker. The first time I'm ever going to say Chris Tucker was good in anything that wasn't The Fifth Element.
I was going to say, he was great in The Fifth
Element.
Yeah,
as Ruby.
I shot him.
He's really, really good in Silver Linings Playbook. And I wish he had gotten at least a nomination because it would have been funny if for nothing else. But it wasn't great.
Well, comedians never really get their due in Hollywood.
That's true. Well, finally, last year, I don't remember the name of the woman, but she won for The Help last year. And she's Octavia Spencer. And she won for The Help, and she's a comedic actress. And she won, and it was kind of a shock, but nobody's actually talked about it because the whole thing is like everybody talks about Oscars going up, and then the next year you forget what movies won.
Right.
Like right now, what won Best Picture last year?
I have no idea.
It was The Artist.
I didn't look into the. Oh, I remember that now. But I wasn't looking at the Oscars at all last year.
Well, like The King's Speech won the year before, and not many people talk about it. I didn't see it.
That's probably one of my favorite movies of all
time. The Social Network came out that year, and I'm a big fan of The Social Network, so I didn't see The King's Speech. I still will see it. Of course, it is on Netflix now, so I'm going to.
I have it here on Blu-ray.
Maybe watch it.
we'll watch it, then we'll come back.
Let's see. What else do we got here?
Amour.
We watched this.
Can I just say, I think my favorite scene in Amour is when he's chasing the pigeon. I know you hated that because there's like a five minute clip of him just, his wife has lost it. He's lost it. And there's this pigeon that just keeps on walking into his apartment like he owns the joint.
Yeah.
And it's him chasing around the room and throwing a towel, trying to catch a pigeon in the towel. And
it's 5 minutes. It's five minutes of him chasing a pigeon. I feel like this movie was just a little bit too avant-garde, artsy, French for me.
I just wanted to love it.
I wanted to enjoy it.
I thought
the beginning scene with him and her when she kind of spaces out and then she shakes
right,
the tea. I thought that was brilliantly done. I was like, wow, this is perfectly paced. And then I think the rest of the movie.
Well, that was the first time you see anything problem. And then you don't know
what's going on.
Like, she has a stroke. You were never shown that she had a stroke right before that she had a stroke.
And then
she had a second stroke. And you're thinking that she's degrading naturally, but it's because of these major events that they're dropping out.
Well, I don't have necessarily as much of a problem with that as I do with just how fucking dull it was. It was...
If he had caught that pigeon and said, I gotcha! Yeah. And he starts bludgeoning it with his fist...
It might have been different.
I think it would
have been like the end of There Will Be Blood. but the... There's one point where one guy comes in, he's visiting her, and going, I want to make sure her health's all right. So the main guy, who's her husband, goes, I'll go get her. He leaves the room, and the other guy sits there and waits for them to come back. It's looking around awkwardly.
And I thought that the movie, the way they did it, because they only used, like, what, 3 or 4 dozen camera angles the entire movie.
That's very true. It's a very stationary movie.
They just wanted the whole thing to be... as if you were actually there, like you were actually observing. Your camera angle never changes. And it just wanted to show you, like, this is the way life is whenever somebody dies.
And
which is very French.
That's fine. I wish I wasn't so bored by it, though.
Yeah. No, it was. What I'm saying. It's boring. Like, regular life is boring.
That is true. Well, I've always felt that there are some people that can write realistic dialogue that are interesting. I think Kevin Smith's a really good writer of dialogue. Tarantino is. It sometimes is a little over the top, but Pulp Fiction. A lot of that movie is them just talking to each other.
Yeah.
Pulp Fiction has one of the greatest scenes of all time in after everybody's seen Pulp Fiction, and I don't care if it's a spoiler. Bruce Willis has killed the guy that he was supposed to throw the fight. He goes back to his house with his girlfriend, and in any other movie, probably in the world, all lesser movies, that means, he goes back and explains exactly what he did, what we already know. And then the movie moves on. Instead, he has a real conversation with his girlfriend about real stuff they would talk about every day when she wants a pot belly and all this stuff. And it is so well done because the story progresses, yet it progresses how our lives would potentially. We don't go in and just go, we got to get out of here. I just killed this guy. Instead, they have a real conversation. He knows what's going to happen. She knows what's happened. They've discussed this already. And we're just kind of going along with the rest of the ride.
The rest of their life. Yeah,
exactly. And I think that's so awesome in Pulp Fiction is that they had great dialogue with real life. Whereas in this, I felt like it was just kind of dull the entire movie. They're just dull people.
Well,
and I don't want to watch a movie about dull people.
It wasn't disjointed either.
Yeah.
Which would be exciting to see, like, oh, she's dead. Actually, no, it is disjointed.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, the very beginning, it opens up with them
finding
the body.
Yeah, that's not a spoiler, yeah. Okay, and then what are the other ones we have here? Beast of the Southern Wild, I saw twice. The first time I saw Beast of the Southern Wild, I went to go see The Tree of Life, which I hated. That was a movie of last year that was nominated. It should have only won cinematography. Other than that, the movie was terrible, pretentious crap. But I saw the trailer for Beast of the Southern Wild, and I am a lover of movie trailers.
Yeah,
movie trailers
are
great.
The best part of going to the theater is seeing the 15-minute trailers at the beginning.
Yes, a lot of times it is, and especially a lot of bad movies. And Beast of the Southern Wild trailer is one of the greatest trailers I've ever seen. After the trailer, I was...
Better than Kung Fu Jesus?
It won't be better than Kung Fu Jesus, but I was sitting in the theater, and like I turned to Rose, who I was watching the movie with, and I went...
From
like,
Titanic.
Yes,
she's really old now.
And I went, like... Wow, like that was amazing. The next day, I saw the movie. I found out where it was playing. I drove an hour and a half back where I live in New Hampshire to go see it. And at the time, I was like, I was kind of lukewarm. My lasting image of the movie, though, was this kind of perky 20-year-old that came into the theater, was bouncing around, very excited about movies as well. She had brought her best friend and her parents, I determined, based off of just watching their interactions. And at the end of the movie, I was kind of like, oh, that was nice, especially because it has a great song at the end. But... That girl that was so perky about seeing this movie was sobbing, like, uncontrollably to the point where her parents had to console her. And I had that lasting image in my mind, like, wow, that must have been a really beautiful movie. I just kind of missed out. So we went and saw it, and that's not the case.
It has to hit you. You have to be able to relate specifically to it.
And I don't think I did. And
well, you never lived in the bathtub.
That's true. I didn't live in the bathtub. What I do like is that the bathtub almost feels like this separate section of the world.
Right. It seemed like even though like it had civilization, like they have paved roads and they had speed limit signs, it just didn't seem like it was part of America. It was its own little niche out in the ocean.
But a lot. It has a spiritual vibe to it. You know, with some of her kind of rantings, the 5-year-old's rantings in the movie, which I'm totally into.
Very well written.
Yeah, and I'm really into the spiritual side of things, especially in movies. I love movies that discuss it or bring it up or anything like that. But I remember you in the during the movie, you go, man, people in the Bayou are just crazy.
Yeah.
And, like, that's kind of what it comes to. It's tough to relate to the characters because... they're so
if you just watch the way ignorant the way they're
and
insane,
they're so
like
cut off and so in love with their area but don't understand that something else could be good for them.
But like, and it's not just in the bathtub, but the next scene, they end up going to Elysian Fields, which is apparently a prostitution house.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a brothel that he takes these five girls to.
Yeah, yeah.
And those people are just as crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very... It's almost... That takes away from the movie, I feel like, because it's like these people are just...
And what took away from the movie is when Bill Compton and Sookie Stackhouse walked in. And all the vampires killed the children.
Yeah, that's true. That was you're that gonna was hate a shame. That was terrible.
Spoiler alert.
Zero Dark Thirty was a movie that everybody was talking about. Best Picture nominations because of the torture scenes in it has kind of the whispers
lost,
have kind
lost
of died
all
up.
Power.
And Catherine Bigelow wasn't even nominated for Best Director, which she won years ago for The Hurt Locker. I didn't care for so many people. So many critics have said this is the best movie. And it's very procedural. I compare it to Argo. I just feel like Argo I was a little more invested in than Zero Dark Thirty. And a lot of people say Jessica Chastain, best actress. I say
she seems like a robot.
And it's a very arm's length movie. You don't get to know her. All you know is that she's determined to do this, and you have no fucking idea why. And unless somebody caught something I just didn't feel the entire time.
I'm sure we'll see it in the comments. Somebody's like, you bastard!
Yeah, well, let's hope we get that many comments.
let's hope somebody watches it and likes it.
I pray.
Please talk to us.
it's a good movie. Or it's an okay movie. Will I see it again? Maybe. But I don't have
You're not going to buy it on Blu-ray.
I will not buy it.
You may
Redbox want to buy it. It's, maybe it has more to it, but it was long. I do love the character actor performances. James Gandolfini shows up in it. Tony Soprano. I love him. Mark Duplass, who's in The League, and he created the mumblecore genre with The Puffy Chair and Jeff Who Lives at Home.
I just want to point out that you mumbled
the mumblecore.
The mumblecore,
of course.
Yeah.
He's great. He's funny, and he's actually good in this. And Bryan Cranston's in it, who wins the Emmy every year for Breaking Bad. He's one of the greatest actors around right now. So
it's surprising because meth really should have destroyed his life.
You'd figure. Yeah. And then now let's talk about the worst movie of the year.
Oh God!
Not only the worst movie nominated, it's the worst movie I've seen in the theater in my entire life. I just saw Stand Up Guys in the theater, which gives it a close run. I did see Failure to Launch in the theater. I have seen some
bad
movies.
The best line I have ever seen in any movie ever was in Failure to Launch, whenever he finds out that Jessica Parker is really this therapist to get him out of house, and he goes, get the fuck out of my car. I say that to every girl I've ever had in my car, ever. Even if I'm not even angry at her, I'm just like, get the fuck out of my car.
That's a little bit depressing that you actually quote Matthew McConaughey and that you quote... Having said that, Matthew McConaughey...
I like Matthew McConaughey because when I was a kid, I was forced to watch...
Fool's Gold.
No, not Fool's Gold. When I was a kid... I was forced to watch
Sahara. Contact.
I'm going to remember. I'm so much better at remembering things than this.
Dazed and Confused?
No, absolutely.
Which
not.
Is actually a good performance. But
A Time to Kill.
Okay.
I was forced to watch A Time to Kill.
I didn't see A Time to Kill, but I've actually
heard about 100,000 times.
Okay, that's fair. He's actually much better now because he's starting to do a lot of this. He just did this independent movie called Mud, which is killing it over, I believe, at Sundance. And he did The Lincoln Lawyer, which
I liked. It was okay.
A lot of people are giving decent reviews to. He just did, what is it called? That really weird movie, Killer Joe, which is a really independent movie. It's supposed to be really weird with Juno Temple, who's a good actress who likes to take off her clothes, which is always nice. Emile Hirsch, who was in Into the Wild, who hasn't got a lot of work since Into the Wild, surprisingly. But it's supposed to be this really strange movie. He's starting to do some good roles. Even though he does do these crap where he just takes off his shirt and goes, all right. But, so anyway, Les Mis.
Which is Magic Mike.
Les Mis,
that's all Magic Mike.
Oh, yeah, of course. Les Mis, you could say I was Les Mis in the theater watching it.
So it was the first 15 minutes, I look over at Adam, and mind you, we've been watching movies all day.
Yeah.
And the first time we got through the second movie, and I go, are you doing all right? You gonna make it? And he goes, oh yeah, I'm great. I love movies.
Yeah.
And then I look over 15 minutes into Les Mis, and Adam is just sprawled out. His legs are kicking out like he's having a seizure. His arms are up behind his head. And I'm just like, Adam, you making it? He starts rubbing his face. This is gonna be rough.
Yeah.
And that was 15 minutes in,
and the movie is still going right now.
Actually,
it's still going on since Friday. The movie hasn't ended.
We had to walk out. First time we ever walked out of a movie.
It is just absolute trash. The whole No, you didn't.
I know. I liked the music of it.
The whole movie is sung, first of all, and a lot of musicals.
I like musicals.
Well, a lot of, and I don't, so that you might have to take that into account. A lot of musicals, they like in a Disney musical, it's talking and then singing, talking and singing. There's four fucking spoken lines in this movie.
There's
five, all the rest is singing. None of it, all of it was done live, as in they were filming it and they were just singing. This wasn't done months before, pre-recorded, and it shows because it sucks. And none of the music is memorable. Even the I Dreamed a Dream That My Life Is Wasn't This Hell I Was Living sucked. I thought it was going to be good. That part sucked. I thought almost every performance in it sucked. I thought everything about the movie sucked. And I thought it was a big waste of time. It was 3 hours of my life I will never get back. The $5 that the movie went to, that you paid for, I'm sorry that you had to pay both $5 fees for us. I will pay you back one day, because you don't deserve that.
Nobody
deserves it. Tom Hooper directed it, who directed the King's Speech. And he went from Oscar movie to this movie that was somehow nominated for an Oscar because somebody...
I think the scope of it is what
100 years ago, someone went, Les Mis is the greatest thing that's ever happened. And since then, every person has believed it without ever watching or paying attention to it.
Even the people in it are anesthetized the entire movie.
I really...
They didn't know that they were filming
like,
the movie.
I pray, if I were to ever watch the movie again, watching frame by frame, that we'd see Hugh Jackman winking at us while he was performing it. Being like, I got $10 million to make this piece of crap. How did I get this? It is so dumb, so annoying, so stupid. I hated everything about it. It's the worst movie I've ever seen in the theater. I will go and review and think about all the movies I've seen in the theater. I did walk out on Valentine's Day, on Valentine's Day, of the birthday of a girl I was with that was on Valentine's Day. And she was the one who told me to leave. And it's the only movie I've ever said, God, I wish there was more George Lopez in that. But this movie probably takes the cake. I didn't walk out because I respected you. And the money you had paid for it, and the fact that we were going to watch more movies.
The fact that we had more movies to watch.
My guess is it would have been better had we gone over to Applebee's, got some more soup, and you had a drink, and we could have just
talked. If I could take gin into the movie theater,
everything would be perfect.
Everything would be so much
okay, better. We still have a couple minutes left.
Yeah,
so,
we got about 10 minutes.
I want to talk about the fact that I saw a lot of movies this year. Four movies, my four favorite movies from this year weren't nominated for anything. Oh, The Master had a couple nominations. I don't put them in any particular order, but The Master is a masterpiece in its own right. I'll probably see it once more in my life because it's kind of disturbing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like what I feel
it's
about
one of those movies that you can only watch twice.
Well, like The Pianist, like incredibly effective movie. God, it's depressing. You know, it's like, what's about the Holocaust? How many movies can you watch about the Holocaust that are serious that, you know, aren't Inglourious Basterds?
Well, that's not about the Holocaust. That's just about World
War II. Yeah, but I mean, the Holocaust was taking place during it, cool. And the Jews are bad in it. Then also, Cloud Atlas, which a lot of people kind of are very mixed on. It's a 3-hour movie, and it's one of those movies that I appreciate that it swung as big as it did.
There are only
like,
four sung lines in the entire movie.
Exactly. It's really tough to say whether or not it's amazing, because I don't think it is. It's amazing that they tried. It should be a TV series, because there's too much to it. It's a swing for the fences, and they hit a double or a triple. Mm. As in, you just couldn't fit. It was one of the movies.
You could not do the entire story.
It's a 3.5-hour movie that I went out going, God, I want more. You know, and like that's a great sign in a movie. It just sucks that there wasn't more, because it is too much.
There's no way they could have made a 4-hour movie.
Exactly, and it's another movie that has a lot of spiritual tones to it. There's all these actors playing all these different roles, and it worked for me for the most part. There's a story here and there that I'm not wild about, but
and you didn't like the nose pieces.
The nose pieces?
They all had prosthetic noses.
I thought all their makeup was great. I think they should win an award for makeup. And nothing's better than seeing Hugh Grant as a cannibal.
Yes.
You know, so, then also Moonrise Kingdom, which I'm pretty sure you saw.
I love Moonrise Kingdom. Actually, no, it was kind of awkward though with the whole prepubescent love, because they get into the little sound that they have and they start taking their clothes off. That was the only awkward scene.
No, but it played so perfectly with the rest of the movie, right. And it was like that's how it would have happened. You know, and Wes Anderson does this really good thing where he creates his own characters in his own little world. Every one of his movies feels like it's like this is the only thing that's happening in the world.
Right, these are the only people that exist.
Exactly, and some people say he's just all style and no substance, and I completely disagree with most of his movies. I think almost all of his movies are good. The Life Aquatic, I loved. Royal Tenenbaums is one of...
Oh, the Royal Tenenbaums is probably one of my top 20 movies.
Some people are in love with Rushmore. I like it a lot.
I didn't like Rushmore.
You didn't? I like it a lot. It's not up to the other ones. Bottle Rocket, I'm not wild about. And The Darjeeling is his worst movie. Fantastic Mr. Fox is a really strange stop motion, but it was actually kind of good. And I feel like Moonrise Kingdom was in the same... It's in the same
breath. I think it should have won for best... should have at least been nominated for screenplay.
It should have been nominated, and that was one of the big snubs, was it didn't get a nomination for best original screenplay. Just give the guy a fucking nomination.
Yeah, so let him have a nod.
And a lot of times people do these career achievement awards. He's done enough in his career now, and he is so loved by so many people. At the same time, he's also... some people think he's a little too cute or a little too artsy, but this movie was really, really fucking good. It was to the same level as Royal Tenenbaums and Life Aquatic. And I feel like, and probably for those people who aren't Life Aquatic people, it's more closer to the Tenenbaums, because I know a lot.
I would definitely say it's more Tenenbaums than Life Aquatic.
And then my other movie, which I'm now, of course, completely blanking on. Oh, the movie I had the most fun during this entire year was Seven Psychopaths.
Damn it. I was okay. Going to take that one.
I saw the trailer, and I thought this is one of the biggest piece of crap trailers
I've ever seen. I saw the trailer, and I was like, I like that.
See,
guy.
I thought it looked so dumb because there was like stupid money sounds as they were handing money over, like ching as he takes his cash, and it looked like it was just going to be a dumb action movie. Then I heard Martin McDonagh wrote it and directed it, which I haven't seen in Bruges, but every person
in
the world,
Bruges is a fantastic.
Everybody says I own it. I haven't
watch
seen it.
It.
I know. I once started watching it. Started falling asleep, and I was like, no, this movie deserves better. I'm not gonna fall asleep during this movie, so I'm going to watch it. So I saw that Martin McDonagh did this, and I was like, everybody loves In Bruges. I bet it's well written. I went and saw it. It is well written. It's well written. It's funny. It's clever. It's over the top, and it's about a screenwriter. It's, I think it's...
A drunk screenwriter.
I think it's very... his name is Marty in the movie. The writer's name is Martin McDonagh. It is him. It is supposed to be him.
It seemed like it had a very personal feel. Like he's been through
this.
And
what I think is, if you've ever seen the movie Adaptation, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, it's about a screenwriter, Nicolas Cage, playing Charlie Kaufman. I feel like it's a similar thing. It's not exactly the same type of... masterpiece, but I do think it is kind of a masterpiece, and I think people are going to kind of recognize it as one. Like, even the cover of it, I saw the cover of the movie, they make it look like a stupid action movie. This was marketed wrong, because it's really funny, and it's really smart, and it's really interesting, and there's great performances by Sam Rockwell, bless you, Colin Farrell, Christopher Walken especially.
Christopher Walken had the best role.
Woody Harrelson does a good job. I think it's probably my favorite movie that came out this past year, and I'm surprised about that. I feel like its screenplay deserves at least a nomination. I think the issue is because it's too violent and a little bit too crazy. But
especially after everything's been going on.
But I feel like I think it's so much smarter than everybody's giving it credit for. I'll watch it again.
Well, there's so much more behind it. Like, I still need to figure out what is written on his goddamn hand.
Yeah.
Because I saw that, and I kept on trying to pause it and fast forward and rewind, but it's on his hand half the movie.
Well, it's...
What is it, dude?
I don't know, because I only saw it in theater. I couldn't pause or rewind or anything like that. This, and I remember like going through it, and I think there's one scene I just don't like. That's the entire movie. And towards the end, I was like, all right, this is either going to go in an incredibly right direction or just kind of make the movie eh. And it went perfect. It went exactly the way it was supposed to.
It was so over the top awesome.
And it was Sam Rockwell's explanation of the fight scene.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It was hilarious.
And then Christopher Walken's speech at the end.
The Chinese guy.
It's one of my favorite parts in any movie this year or any movie ever. So I think Seven Psychopaths, if you haven't seen it, every person I've talked to about it, they go like, oh my God, it was great. It was great. It just didn't get noticed because, one, it was marketed poorly, and for people,
it really wasn't marketed that well, or that off.
Yeah, that's very true. And it got big. I mean, like, it got some notice because In Bruges got some notice.
Right.
And I feel like this is
maybe
something,
his next one will have the most notice.
He's going to be a writer that's not going to be. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that's going to be like up there. Like Charlie Kaufman isn't. I mean, people recognize him as one of the great writers, but he's not going to write movies that are super accessible. He wrote Being John Malkovich, Adaptation. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. These are more independent movies because he's smarter. And I don't think that there's any mainstream movies that really make you think. Some people say like Inception. Inception makes you a little bit, but it's still a major blockbuster movie. And it really isn't as deep as everybody thinks. It's still fucking awesome.
Right.
But I just don't feel... I feel like he can't write something like that because he writes things that people don't want to digest. And I think we should, though. I think it's something that everybody should check out, without a doubt.
No, yeah. I really wish I had a chance to go first for this one because you took all
the movies. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, because you did see those. Well, okay, there's a bunch of other movies that did come out, like Looper.
Looper I actually liked. I enjoyed Looper. Hate time movies, though.
Time travel movies. If time travel does it right, I'll give it to them. It didn't.
This is what you have to understand about time travel, and I'm not a physicist of any means.
Yep.
But you're worried that they go back in time and they change something. Yep. And they still exist, or something. Somehow, mm-hmm. the universe still plays out as it should.
Yep, can't happen.
It can, and this is why. So, for example, spoiler alert: get the fuck out of here. When Bruce Willis gets sent back the first time, and he dies, and he gets sent back, and then Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character dies, and then everything just kind of starts over. That's because in that universe, it was over. They didn't destroy the universe. No, but the story was over for them. And then they went into another universe where Bruce Willis gets away. And then at the very end of the movie, whenever Joseph Gordon-Levitt kills himself, the universe where Bruce Willis's future existed, and he had a wife and everything, and they lived happily ever after in China,
yep.
that still existed. It didn't ever disappear. It's just, it's not going to be
the issue, because Bruce Willis goes back and then stops himself from dying. From getting shot by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who is himself. So, by doing that, Bruce Willis could not have existed.
No, they've opened... That's exactly what I'm saying. They just made another universe.
Yes, but that's not what Bruce Willis would be. He couldn't be that. He wouldn't remember his wife. And also...
causality.
But then there's the one part where it definitely fails. Joseph Gordon-Levitt carves something into his arm, and Bruce Willis feels it. Because it's a different universe, he can't. He doesn't have his memories. He doesn't do his things. So Bruce Willis all of a sudden has a scar show up on his arm. No, it doesn't work.
That is the big plot hole. Whenever they start torturing the man and rip off his nose and stuff like that, his hands, and he gets
dimmed. Does not work.
That's the only thing that would not play out. They wouldn't have each other's memories.
I also just didn't care about, like, if you want, okay, I can put time travel issues aside because I do love, like, Back to the Future, and there's tons of paradoxes in that, but it's still fun.
It's not meant to be a science movie. It's meant to be a fun...
And Looper, I just don't care about any of the characters ever at all. I didn't hate it, but at the same time, I didn't like it. I don't want to watch it again ever. I have no interest. So many people love this movie, and
it was a good movie. It was enjoyable, and it was noble at the end.
Well, of course it was. It had to be. And I actually spoke with Rian Johnson, the director, on Twitter a little bit. Because I made a joke to him about Looper, and he talked back, and then I was like, I was being sarcastic, bro, and he was like, oh, cool.
Thanks, bro.
But he's made three movies now. I haven't seen The Brothers Bloom. He made Brick, which I wasn't in love with, but Brick is a lot of the reason why I made my short film. And so I give him credit for that, but I just don't think he's quite made something great yet, but he's got the talent to make something great. I know we're running a little over time, but it's the off 5 minutes. All right, we have to talk about The Hobbit, because The Hobbit came out this year.
Yes, The Hobbit was really a good movie, but it was so over expected because of
I think that's what crushed a lot of people's ideas of this.
So anytime anything starts off, it's always going to be very slow. If you watch a TV show that you love from the very beginning, and then you go back to season one, you're just like, oh my god, get to the point already.
That makes sense.
And with Lord of the Rings, we already had that, oh my god.
Yeah.
The first movie we loved, but then after watching the third movie, going back to the Fellowship, you just don't like how slow it moves. And The Hobbit is its own Fellowship. It's meant to be its own story that parallels with everything.
The one thing they did wrong was they split it into three movies. It should be split into two movies.
Right.
Because the book isn't very long, but there is a lot of shit that goes on. Because I know you've read the book.
The book is half as long as The Fellowship. So yeah, I don't even know how they managed to make it into three movies.
It can be made into two because there was a lot of little events that happened. I liked it. I didn't love it, but because it's not The Fellowship, and The Fellowship is the best of all the Lord of the Rings movies by far.
But people were expecting the same action the same energy as in the third.
But it's not the same thing because the Hobbit isn't, like, the world is in fucking danger in Lord of the Rings. In the Hobbit, it's just a journey. It's like a side quest.
Yeah.
But it's a really awesome side quest. And I love Gandalf in anything. And I think why I like Fellowship so much is because of Gandalf's part in the Fellowship.
Fly, boom.
Yes, exactly. And I actually liked a lot of the dwarves. My biggest issue with the movie is that it does run a little bit long because they're stretching it.
They want to make more
money. Of course they do. But also, I hated that they kind of winked at us a little bit, like, hey, remember these characters? Like when they go to Rivendell, Elrond is there, Galadriel is there, all of them are there, and they're like, hey, check it out.
We're back.
Yeah, it's like, no, they didn't show up in the book. Don't fucking do that to us.
Right.
You know, and then like bringing Legolas into the story. Don't do that. Like, he had nothing to do with the books.
He's not involved.
I know Orlando Bloom is struggling to get work right now, but don't just give him a stupid
walk-on role.
Exactly. Right. Also, I know that they wrote a female character in for the next couple movies. Because it is true if you think about Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, it's pretty much void of
dude,
all.
It's dude central.
Oh, it's so dude central. But that's kind of the thing about the. I don't have a problem with it.
It's meant. Well, I mean, women didn't go on these big quests. I mean, in these fantasy worlds.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it was good. It just didn't live up to Lord of the Rings, so it's a step down. But I like the Hobbit book so much, and right. I feel like the next two, which is The Desolation of Smaug, and I don't remember the last one's name, but I feel like those ones are going to be so much better, you know what I mean?
Right. No,
this is the beginning part, and I actually love the beginning when they're in Bilbo's house, and the dwarves are there, and they're singing, and they're having fun, because I like that we kind of get here, but the biggest issue is I feel like a lot of the dwarves you don't get to know. You know, it's
right,
like,
well, there's so many
there's
of them.
I don't know why there's got to be 14 dwarves or whatever there are. I think there's 13 or 12.
That's just Mr. Tolkien's way?
I know. Well, it's like you get to know Thorin, a little bit of Balin, and then all the rest. For some reason, Filly and Killy, they show 1,000 times.
Well, that's just because they're easy to remember.
And
Filly
I think
and
Biffer is one of the guys they show because he's got a sweet beard. But like Bomber, the fat one, has no lines the entire movie. He just like falls over on things because he's fat. And then the rest of the dwarves, it's like, they're just there, and
that's the issue. That happens a lot with these big storylines. And I mean, if you remember Fellowship, they had just as many characters, except they were all different species. So you were able to identify.
Well,
which
but
one
they it's feel like every person in the Fellowship had.
They
a
did
part.
Have some time.
You know, it's like in the Fellowship, Gandalf is so great, and then you get Frodo, and then you get Sam, who's his lovable sidekick, and then there's
Mary
the comic relief
Pippin,
in Merry,
yeah.
And Pippin is kind of in between, and then you've got Boromir, and Boromir's death in Fellowship.
No, Boromir was my favorite character.
He's Gandalf's my favorite, but Boromir's is close second because he's the actual most like fractured and realistic character. He's the one person that is corrupt by the ring, but at the same time doesn't want
to
be. Like
right.
he
and
really,
he's able to overcome.
He really wants to.
Spoiler
be,
alert!
He really wants to
Boromir
be.
Does.
He really wants to help people. You know, and like Aragorn has his own thing, and then they build the relationship of Gimli and Legolas, where they're nothing in the book, really.
Right.
They're just
side characters.
From what I understand, Tolkien really liked to do was he liked to write scenery and talk about his universe, and he needed a story to bring it together so people would actually read it. And that's why he did The Hobbit, and that's why he did Lord of the Rings. The Lord of the Rings started as a story he was telling to his kids.
Right.
So I just feel like this one didn't feel as personal, you know, as the other ones did. And the Gollum exchange does take a little bit long, and everybody's like, oh, Gollum's back. I don't like Gollum.
Gollum is not the best character.
He's not even close. I think he's really annoying. So, but I like Martin Freeman as Bilbo. I think he did a good job. And I've always liked Bilbo more than I like Frodo. Frodo's kind of prissy and lame, where Bilbo's kind of like, he kind of tricks
everybody.
He's very
opportunistic.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. It's kind of him.
Whereas Frodo is always too honest.
He's too
Boy
good.
Scout.
Well, I feel like Bilbo thinks he's kind of a Boy Scout.
He thinks he's a good guy, but he doesn't realize how much of a piece of shit he is.
He can really be. So we had to talk about The Hobbit because, I mean, it's one of the biggest movies this year. And any other movies?
Not that I can think of, but we do need to wrap up. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back over and just list the ones that we think are going to win as our Oscar predictions. So for Best Supporting Actress.
Best Supporting Actress. What is going to win?
What's going to win?
What's going to win for Best Supporting Actress is, let me look at this, Anne Hathaway. Anne Hathaway is going to win, yes.
And Supporting Actor?
Supporting Actor is going to go to Tommy Lee Jones.
Okay. And Best Actress?
Actress, I believe I chose Reva.
Reva, you said
Jennifer Lawrence has got a chance, but I still think Emmanuel Reva because of the story.
Okay.
I'm sticking with Reva.
All right, so
Best actor, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
I still think it's going to go to Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper will be a close second, but once again...
He was in Dark Shadows.
Was he really?
Yeah.
I never saw Dark Shadows.
Yeah. It was okay.
It was okay. Best director.
Best director is definitely going to be Mr. Spielberg.
I think Spielberg's got it, but Ang Lee is a surprise. If you see Ang Lee win, I called it, okay? And I would like...
No. You called Spielberg. Shut up.
Okay.
You can pick Ang Lee if you want.
I want Ang Lee to win, but and he's got a chance, but I think Spielberg will take
Spielberg.
It.
Spielberg. All right, so you don't think, you know, it's going to happen.
Spielberg will get
and
it.
Lincoln best movie of all time, Les Mis.
Les Mis will win not only great Best Picture this year, it will win Best Picture all time.
It will replace Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane, which didn't win an Oscar, by the way.
Of course not.
I think the Best Picture will be Lincoln.
Lincoln.
I think Argo's got an outside shot. But just because it has no other real nominations besides supporting with Arkin, I think Lincoln will take it.
Okay. So we got Lincoln, Daniel Day-Lewis, Riva, Tommy Lee Jones, Anne Hathaway, and Steven Spielberg.
That's what we got.
That's what we're calling. Enjoy enjoy the outro music.
And enjoy the Oscars.
Enjoy the Oscars.
We'll come back and we'll talk about... We'll do a post-Oscar thing when we get back together and we'll talk about the winners, losers, snubs,
if Tommy Lee Jones smiles. Like, if he wins, he has to fucking smile.
I don't think he will.
Did he lose it? Did he lose his smile?
He might have.
There's a story about children losing their smile.
He lost a smile when he did the movie Volcano. He said, what am I doing?
That was such a depressing movie when I was a kid.
It was a piece of shit.
But when you're a kid, you're like, why are those people melting, bro? I saw that when I was like 8 years old.
I saw it in the theater, too. That's terrible. It's a terrible movie.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening in on our podcast. We had a great time recording it, and we look forward to the end of our predictions.
Yes, and we'll be seeing you weekly. We're going to do this weekly.
We're going to do this weekly. Even if we don't see a new movie or a few new movies, we're still going to talk about movies we've seen.
And TV shows, too, and because we both, Netflix, Hulu, we both have a ton of shows. We're both really interested in pop culture.
Adam watches things on a television stamp.
Yes, we have no other skills, so we decide to watch other things.
All right, goodbye, everybody.
See ya.
Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?